Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers. Lose the wizard hat. And ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of Geek Cave Podcast Buffering. Buffering. Movies! I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad, reminding you that the sign language equivalent of a tongue twister is a finger fumbler. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today, with great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old-school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or you're just weird, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. Also by Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the posted paid envelope for a new one. Or keep it forever, pay a lot less than in-store prices. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Justin, I've been feeling a little rough this past week, and I can't hear mostly out of my right ear from a hockey game I went to. Woo! And so I haven't had a chance to do anything else. What's your what's your social calendar look like?
Damas y caballeros, Carlos Santana.
Pilot Party!
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? Because there's only so much I can do in the weeks after St. Patrick's Day.
That's fair.
Today we are discussing the 2023 Mexican TV series Against the Ropes, airing on Netflix here in the States. We meet Angela. She is getting out of prison. She's being released 2 years early for good behavior, even though she did just get into fight with somebody in the yard. But she spent 6 years in prison, and all she wants to do is get home to her mom and her little girl. Her mother picks her up, Victoria. Victoria picks her up, and Angela's like, where's Rocio? My daughter. Well, she's busy. She couldn't make it. She's fine. Okay, fine. They go home, and Angela's looking for her daughter. Where is she? Well, Angela's been gone for 6 years. So about year three, Grandma had to ask Rocio's father, Lalo, for help. He's been kind of a deadbeat up to that point. Hmm. And just for context, Rocio was about six when Angela went went into jail. So for about 9 years of this child's life, her father was nowhere to be found. Then there he is. This pisses Angela off because, well, he was no good. So she goes out looking, and through some snooping and gossip and whatever, she finds her daughter at the local wrestling rink where a match is going on between an opponent and the current champion, Candy. Candy. Now, these are luchador wrestlers, so they all have masks on. It's really cool. Candy is wearing this very bright pink and white outfit. She has pigtails coming out of the top of her mask, and she's just very exuberant, and you just want to smack her. And at the end of the match, which Candy wins, she dedicates it to her daughter, Rocio. And she runs up in the ring and they hug. And Angela's just like, what the hell? Oh, no, indeed. Oh, no. Angela goes backstage and finds out that Candy is Lalo's girlfriend, and for the past 3 years, Candy has been helping raise Rosia and thinks of her as her own daughter. All Angela wants to do is spend time with her daughter and try to get her life back on track. Rosia, who is now 12, 13, somewhere in there, doesn't really want to be with her mother because she's been gone and she's a snotty teenager and she wants to hang out with the cool girlfriend of her dad, who's a luchador wrestler. And frankly, yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So Angela tries to get her life back on track. She gets a job at a wedding dress shop and is trying to build a relationship with Rosio, but she's not having it. She just wants to spend time with her dad and Candy. And in fact, Candy wants Rosio to move in with them full time, to which Rosio just blurts out to her mom one day after an argument and runs out. Angela follows her, and of course they went down to the rink, and Candy's about to go on. Lalo, who works at the ring and is the announcer, says, "Hey, anybody who can last 3 minutes with Candy will win some money. Who's up?" Well, Angela, of course, jumps in the ring.
Ah, the classic yeah. Spider-Man challenge.
So they start going at it, and at first you're like, okay, she's been in prison. She probably knows how to defend herself. Oh, she's got some moves. She's not doing too well, but she's got some promise. She loses and limps away in disgrace. In fact, everybody there, in fact, the audience can hear the argument going on between Angela and Candy about Rosio. As Angela is limped away, people are throwing food at her, calling her bad mom, all that sort of stuff. She goes to visit a friend of, Angela goes to visit an old friend of hers who works at another wrestling ring, gym, whatever, who was a friend of organization, who was a friend of her father's, who turns out was a luchador wrestler. Wrestling has always been a sore subject in the family because he just up and left one day. Things go on, and Angela is just pissed. She wants her daughter back. She wants Candy to just go away, and she wants Lalo to F off as well. So she finally decides, you know what? If my daughter won't respect me, maybe she'll respect somebody else. And she creates this persona of the Black Bride. And the last thing we see is her putting on a luchador mask as she's preparing to start her career to take Candy down a peg or two. Now, the estranged parent trying to reconnect with a child plot isn't new. But adding in female luchador wrestlers is. And this is some good quality wrestling at like WWE level. And I think they had a hand in producing it on some level. In fact, I think Rey Mysterio is part of it somewhere along the way.
I wouldn't be surprised.
So, I mean, the stuff in the ring is good. You can tell that it's, these aren't like stunt doubles going at it. This is good quality stuff. Now for my predictions. Angela works her way up the ranks in the wrestling circuit, eventually taking on Candy for the title. By this point, Rosio is torn because she loves Candy, but the Black Bride is awesome. Candy is also conflicted because she's fallen in love with this mysterious wrestler. Angela narrowly wins the match, becoming the new champion. Backstage, Angela reveals to Rosio and Candy her identity, and that, despite it all, she's fallen for Candy too. Candy dumps Lalo, and the three of them live a happy life together and keep wrestling. I give it 4 out of 5 strong women who don't need no man out of 5.
That's absolutely wonderful.
If I may make a recommendation based on what Justin just reviewed.
Go ahead.
If you want a wrestling show that 100% embraces the fact that it's a show, Lucha Underground. There's some crazy shit there. And I think the first two or three seasons, yes, seasons, because again, they don't pretend, is available on Netflix. And let's see, there's murder mysteries, there's gang wars, and of course there's wrestling. So yeah, check that out.
Wow.
All right.
Lucha Underground.
I didn't even know that existed.
It's very good.
Well, going to Netflix now.
Yep.
Such as it is, there's a lot of shows out there that live in the memory of TV land. Some of them given new life, some are relegated to the dustbins of history, and this segment of the show asks about one such, maybe forgotten, piece of television history and asks, should we review it? Good then, the original's good now. Reboot it, the idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Revive it, what are these characters doing after a couple of decades of growth and development? Or refuse it, Chad, what? A slightly different question for you this month. Because this particular show's already had a few iterations, just not since 1988. It began as a series of theatrical shorts in 1942 from the mind of Isidore Klein at Terry Toon's studio. Streaking through the sky in a blue superhero suit with a red cape that he would keep for 10 cartoons, before donning a red suit with a yellow cape, before settling on his final costume of a yellow suit with a red cape. Streaking through the sky saves the day for all mouse kind. His superpowers vary and are oftentimes limitless, from super strength to invulnerability to even using his flight contrails as ropes to pull ships. Mighty Mouse has shown up in theater shorts, and those shorts being turned into Mighty Mouse Playhouse for television in the 60s and 70s. He showed up again in 1979 and 80 when Filmation made some cartoons that joined Mighty Mouse with Heckle and Jekyll. And finally, The New Adventures, which were produced in 87, 88 by Ralph Bakshi.
You know, I remember that one.
Those
I
the
remember
ones
most of them, but yeah.
That we would probably most remember. The best remembered episode of that series featured a crossover with Mighty Mouse and another one of Bakshi's creations, The Mighty Heroes. Comprised of Strongman, Tornado Man, Rope Man, Cuckoo Man, and Diaper Man. And in this 1988 episode, Heroes and Zeros, the Mighty Heroes were middle-aged men, except for Diaper Man, who was 36, and were all accountants for the firm of Man, 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 and Man. After all this time and all these iterations, tell me what you think of Mighty Mouse. Back to the work that's been done, on to new adventures, or skip it because, wow, that's a thing that they did.
I like Mighty Mouse. It's a fun little diversion. I mean, it's your classic tale of you take a superhero and you make them something different.
Mm-hmm.
It's Superman as a mouse. But it's a fun little diversion. They're little shorts. You know, it's nothing to get too worked up about. I like it. It's a fun diversion.
Yeah. I would, well, first of all, wanted to correct myself. Lucha Underground is on Prime. It was on Netflix. But back to Mighty Mouse. Yeah, give me some new Mighty Mouse. I think that we need some new content. And goodness knows that there are some talented animators still out there. I would love to see... Like the people behind Gravity Falls, I'd love to see them get a hold of Mighty Mouse because I think that they could do some amazing stuff with it.
An Alex Hirsch-led Mighty Mouse reboot. Wow.
Yeah, think about that.
Well, either that or Butch Hartman. I'd be fine with either of those.
Yeah.
So I want Mighty Mouse to tie in with Phineas and Ferb somehow.
So this is one of those shows. I went back and watched like a half a dozen of the 1940s theatrical shorts.
Mm-hmm.
These should be watched with a very clear eye.
Yes, fair.
The 40s were a time, man.
Yes,
wow.
They were.
But there is an episode that I would recommend to anyone. It would be the 8th theatrical short, and it's called like The Hesperus, the Rescue of the Hesperus or something like that. It is based on the poem from Longfellow. And the narrator is gold. Just absolute comedy gold. If you watch this and you don't laugh at the despair and the panic in the captain's daughter, we can't be friends. And so it's on YouTube. I think all of the shorts are on YouTube, you know, kind of thing. But well worth it. And I'm a fan of new episodes in this. You know, the old stuff is fun to watch now, like just because I'm kind of a student of film history and cartoons and such. And, you know, I remember that theme song, you know, when it eventually made its appearance.
Here I come to save the day.
But I think new stuff would be so much more fun, especially considering the number of superhero things we have that can be satirized by Mighty Mouse.
Absolutely.
You know? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So there we have that. On to a trailer park roundup. Boy, are there a lot of trailers. There are a lot of them. Knights of the Zodiac starts us off. A boy finds out he's the chosen one. Sean Bean's in it, so at the very least, we'll get a good death scene.
True.
The Little Mermaid. Okay, I love the fuller tone that Halle Bailey is bringing to Ariel. Like, listening to her sing it, and then listening to, like, cartoon Ariel is so much more enjoyable, and not because the cartoon Ariel did a bad job. It's just a difference in the way they've recorded and the style and so forth. But it is like dark chocolate for the ears. You know, it is just rich, and it is silky, and it's smooth, and it's just mwah. I'm interested in what new lyrics Lin-Manuel Miranda is introducing to the show, and I'm starting to wonder if they include him on these things, because otherwise he'll go somewhere else and write music. Otherwise, it looks like a mostly live-action Disney's Little Mermaid, which is one of the first movies that I remember going to see in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
TMNT Mutant Mayhem. I'm not sold on the animation style. But after the second watch through, I am okay with the voices, especially as young teenagers. You know?
That's fair.
And after the overly intense Michael Bay affairs and the overly serious TMNT animated movie, I'm kind of hopeful for a bit of 80s nostalgia in this version's tone. You know, like, that's what I want here. You know, give me a little bit more, not necessarily slapstick, but light heart.
That is the vibe I got.
Now, Renfield.
Yeah.
I like Nicholas Holt. When I saw the first trailer, I thought this was a Warm Bodies sequel or a spinoff. But Nicolas Cage as the villainous Dracula and Holt as a superpowered Renfield is so much better. This movie is sure to disappoint, but by God, the trailers are great.
I want to see it. I really do. I love Dracula as a character.
Of course you want to see it. You are a man of class and distinction. Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken. Superhero sea creatures. I mean, of course.
Yeah. Of course.
Krakens versus mermaids. I mean, everyone knows that Ariel would have stone cold killed the guy if she had a chance. It's just the first one she saw was cute. At last, we will know. We will finally get the mighty Kraken as the hero we deserve.
Yes.
The Machine. Come for the fictional part two of the story. Stay for Mark Hamill saying, ooh, drugs.
Ooh, more drugs. Yes.
One Ranger. John Malkovich is in this. And they did not make him the Ranger. I mean, fine, you made like one of the guys who was Punisher the Ranger, but come on. John Malkovich was right there. He's in your movie. It's about a Texas stereotype Ranger in London. Why is John Malkovich your British guy? You hurt my feelings. That's also the name of the next movie.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how I feel about this one. They're billing it as a comedy, but it looks an awful lot like a slice of life drama when they talk about the lies you tell to the people you love. Maybe a bit more context before seeing this one. All right, Evil Dead Rise. It looks like a modern Evil Dead, in the most accurate of ways. Body horror and dark themes. Don't like that there's kids in it, but the only time kids in a horror have ever really worked for me was Children of the Corn. And
when they are the horror?
Yeah. When the kids are the horror, that's when it works. Or when I know afterwards that all the kids are okay, then I'm okay with it. But, like, that requires spoilers and so forth. Like, the first half of It, totally okay with. Second half of It, totally okay with, because they were all grown up by that point.
Yeah.
You can kill adults. I'm good with that. In movies.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
For those of you at home, the lawyers just handed him a slip of paper, and that's why there was a pause.
Mm. Yeah.
So, did you guys see the trailer for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Once and Always?
Yes. Yep.
Coming to Netflix instead of theaters, it's essentially Power Rangers' version of Turtles Forever.
I have questions, but yes.
I know almost nothing about the series. I know nothing about the Power Rangers other than, you know, it was a show that my brother liked more than I did. But I thought I better include it because I have a question. No wrong answers. Who wins? Megazord or the assembled Voltron? And why?
Ooh. Oh.
You know what? We can go ahead and we'll just expand this to any piloted mech. So we'll take the Transformers out of it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say between Megazord and Voltron.
Right.
This hurts. This hurts.
Isn't this a fun one?
This hurts.
No wrong answers. We're all friends here until the end of this question.
Yeah. I loved Power Rangers growing up, right? It was one of my favorite shows. It was appointment television for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, but I got to say Voltron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to say Voltron because the Power Rangers, and I get it, it was a show for kids, but the majority of their monsters were goofy. They weren't like really what I would consider world-ending threats, whereas the Voltron Force are taking on, you know, like a whole goddamn empire, as opposed to like a crazy lady who lived in a garbage can for 1,000 years and her motley crew of misfits. So as much as I love the Power Rangers, I'm going to go with Voltron.
Same.
All right. Well, I can appreciate your answer and your agreement. I think that Megazord had the much better guitar riff.
It did.
You know,
well, yes.
But I'm still going to go with Saber Rider's Ramrod. mostly because it is voiced by Peter Cullen doing a John Wayne impression. Head him up. Move him out. Besides, it wore a cowboy hat and a cape. So, I mean.
All right.
And to be clear, I'm not speaking for Darren, but for me, I'm talking about the Lion Force Voltron,
right?
Not the rescue vehicles Voltron that took 36 different vehicles to form one robot.
No, well, when we say Voltron, we just mean Voltron. We don't mean that bullshit. We mean Voltron.
Well, yeah. Yes. I mean, if you're going to do that, then we may as well open up to Devastator or something. All right.
I would love to see the ship from Outlaw Star take a good crack at it, but no, it's Voltron.
Yeah.
Oh, Big O. What about him?
Ooh. It's still Voltron.
It's No. I'm just thinking. No, versus Megazord.
Ooh.
I'm throwing in other mechs versus Megazord.
One of the Gundams from Gundam Wing, but the difficulty is they can't talk about how terrible war is while they're doing it.
It's like trying to get any one of us to tell a story without using our hands. That's just ridiculous.
But then they're handicapped. You can't do that, man.
On to some reviews. What do you think of some reviews?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Darren, do you watch anything?
I watched the first couple issues of the latest season of Superman and Lois.
Yeah?
Just
put them on the table there and stared at them?
Yeah. They're pretty good. First couple episodes are pretty good. the villain, it seems, well, there's going to be three villains. We know Lex Luthor has been cast. We haven't seen him on the show yet as of this taping. Bruno Mannheim is one of the main villains this year. And so is a villain known as Onomatopoeia.
Onomatopoeia, huh?
Which Justin might want to look into for a future long box. But Onomatopoeia in this case, because in the comics, it's basically someone who doesn't seem to have metahuman powers, but still there's a whole lot of, you know, bam and pow and biffs when they're involved. This one is a female version with a mask, and I think what they're going for is sound waves, because like you can't see the face. You see this weird design, think like Rorschach, except it's flesh colored, and it really makes me think of like the Wrong Thing. But instead, like it yeah. Yeah, I know. I can't say it because I'm trying to keep us PG, but it looks like one of those. But other than that, it's pretty good. Superman and Lois is still pretty solid. Also saw we've been watching Mandalorian. Mandalorian is still good with one exception. Yeah, you see it. That's exactly. He just pulled up a picture of female Onomatopoeia. Just Google it. I'm not putting it as the art for this episode. But we've been watching Mandalorian, and it was good except for one episode. And people who've been watching the season know which episode I'm talking about. And people who have not, I'm not going to warn you. You're going to have to suffer like the rest of us did.
Yeah, I need to get caught up on that and watch season 3, and I will probably suffer.
You will. And you'll find yourself by the end of that episode wondering, should I keep watching this show? And then the next two episodes will totally redeem it. But yeah, just go in prepared.
Okay.
So I watched a bunch of movies.
Okay.
The Babysitter. Satanic cult led by a freshman's babysitter has more laughs than screams and enough cartoonishly bloody fun to recommend it. Not for everybody. Couple of jarring tonal shifts, but I'll probably end up rewatching it come Halloween. It's a B. All Quiet on the Western Front. This is the anti-war film that won the Oscar. You know? German language. Not fun in the least. Really, really well done. Be warned, the book is about 105 years old. It does not take a romantic view of war. And neither does the movie.
Good.
Solid A.
All right.
Enola Holmes 2. Quick review. Not as good as the first one. Still quite enjoyable and entertaining. The director still insists that the fourth wall doesn't exist, which occasionally becomes tiring. Henry Cavill is the Sherlock I want in the next series of Sherlock movies. And if they decide to build a shared universe of Enola Holmes, Sherlock Holmes, and a Mycroft series, I would jump on that faster than Marvel's Phase 4, 5, and 6. Solid A. I am not okay with this. Based on a graphic novel, series follows Sydney Novak, who's developing superpowers that manifest when she's faced with emotionally charged situations. The rare occasion when the show is better than the book. Everything runs just a little bit tighter. Sydney's voiceovers make her a lot more sympathetic than her actions alone do, and by the end of the season, we're hungry for more of the story, but the pandemic happened and Netflix said, no. Little sad there. Those are what I watched in terms of movies and shows to review, except for that random movie. So, with
Ooh.
Nothing... Yeah, Darren.
Ooh. Yeah, I got something.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Okay, now I know I'm breaking the cardinal rule about it by talking about it, but who here has seen Fight Club? Justin, have you seen it, or are you adhering to the rules?
Both, I think.
Okay. Well, after the copyright warning on the Fight Club DVD, it's only there for a split second, but there's another warning written by Tyler Durden, the main character. And if you pause quick enough, you'll find it. I went ahead and transcribed it. If you are reading this, then this warning is for you. Every word you read of this useless fine print is another second off your life. Don't you have other things to do? Is your life so empty you honestly can't think of a better way to spend these moments? Or are you so impressed with authority that you give respect and credence to all who claim it? Do you read everything you're supposed to read? Do you think everything you're supposed to think? Buy what you're told you should want? Get out of your apartment. Meet a member of the opposite sex. Stop the excessive shopping and masturbation. Quit your job. Start a fight. Prove you're alive. If you don't claim your humanity, you will become a statistic. You have been warned.
Thank you, Darren.
Yep.
Nice.
Well, with that, it's time for the random movie review. Kent!
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
So the roll of the dice has the next movie I review being Dracula Untold.
Ooh.
Okay.
For this one, though, I watched The Babysitter Killer Queen. It's a sequel. Because it's a sequel, a couple of the reveals lack impact. Strangely, though, the film still works on its own. And yes, I did watch this one first without watching the first one.
Okay.
The film follows Cole Johnson, a junior in high school who suffers from PTSD after surviving a night during which a satanic cult led by his babysitter tried to kill him. Everyone seems to think that he's had a psychotic break, and his parents plan to enroll him in a school that specializes in psychiatric care. When Cole realizes this, he escapes with his best friend, neighbor, and possible crush, Melanie, her boyfriend, and two other friends. They're going to go to a lake party. On this same day that all this is happening, we're introduced to Phoebe Atwell, new student played by Jenna Ortega, doing a Wednesday impression 2 years before Wednesday will be released. At the lake party, Melanie, that's the best friend and possible crush, kills one of the other kids and saves her blood and tells Cole, "We need your blood as an innocent in order to complete the ritual." Her entire motivation for doing this ritual and making a deal with the devil is because she wants to be an influencer. Because you know what's cooler than a million followers? A billion followers.
I mean, you can make some real good money.
Apparently. And at this point, a bunch of people arrive on this houseboat that they're doing that this is happening. And they are revealed to be the cultists that were killed in the last movie.
Yeah.
Okay. At this point, I want to say that Robbie Amell shows up. And he doesn't wear a shirt.
No.
And he is an absolute delight. Every time that he's on screen is the best part of the movie. Every time.
Every time. All right.
Not just because he's not wearing a shirt. Although, quite honestly, I was kind of there for it. And they're getting ready to kill Cole. You know, he's the innocent that they need. And if it wasn't for Jenna Ortega's Phoebe showing up and causing a distraction, Cole would have been killed. But instead, what we get is a pretty decent, lighthearted, scary movie that has Phoebe and Cole together trying to defend themselves and defeat the cult. It's funny, suspenseful, it's cartoonishly gory. The characters are well-defined within their stereotypes. And I won't spoil the ending other than to say that Cole's parents no longer think that he's crazy. And if they make a threequel, I'll probably see it. I like this well enough that I went back to watch the first movie, which I reviewed, you know, a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Jenna Ortega is a delight as the weird new kid. And the way they built her into the story, though a bit trite, works in the context of the rest of the film. This is one of those films kind of like Zombieland where they just have words that show up on screen. And so when you see somebody, when that first victim is killed, all of a sudden showing up on the screen in great big, you know, 3D letters, he just goes, "What the F," you know, and then dot, dot, dot again. It's fun. I mean, the particular film, it's best understood as a series of films in one sitting. I would almost say, because every villain in it, of which there's like seven in this one, right? Like there's one mastermind, but then there's a whole bunch of the flunkies. And all of the flunkies have their own scene. And that scene should just be seen as its own mini movie that Cole and Phoebe have to deal with it. It allows the tone to shift very quickly. And while occasionally a bit cringy, it doesn't stay there long enough to get overwhelming. And then the fun is back.
Cool.
Maybe a bit too much of a good thing going on in some of this, but overwhelmingly, this is a light kind of horror movie. And while in no way appropriate for children, one that I think a group of adults could probably watch, you know, in a group and really have a lot of fun. For me, though, it's a Be Like Me because I thought it was fun and I was all by myself. So, with no other business, thanks to our sponsors, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly, check out news and reviews not on the podcast on the website, geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversation. Tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, and so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, including You Want Me to Watch What? And Week 3. Then head over to our YouTube channel to see Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. For Kent Harris, our serious paladin. For Darren Wright, our charismatic sorcerer. For Justin White, our sexy bard. I'm Chad Savage, and I am
the Dungeon Master.
Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.